Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale. Shmati Bhakti Vedanta Swanani Namane. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharne. Niravishesha Shunyavadi Pastyachadish Tarne. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Brahmanichananda. Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivas Adi Gauravakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hari Rama, Rama Rama, Hari Hari. Vanchkapa Charubhyas Chai Kripa Sindhubhyevacha. Paditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sri Brihad Bhagavatamrita Ki Jai. Srila Sanatan Goswami Ki Jai. Gopremanande. All right. Oh, Krishna. Let us, right. So let us have a look here now. We finished last night with verse 29. And Lord Indra is about to tell, just right now, he's about to tell Narada Muni that actually the person you're looking for is not me. It's your own father, Lord Brahma. It's your own father. He is the one who has received the most mercy from the Lord. So Indra starts then from verse 30, to verse 36, Indra explains why he feels it's like that. Why it is that Lord Brahma has got the mercy, special super mercy. So let's read through. So verse 30, and this is Lord Indra speaking. But you should know, O best son of Brahma, that your own father is the true recipient of the favor of Lord Hari. He is directly the son of Lord Vishnu, the husband of Lakshmi. Of course, that's true. He is the son of Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma. Was born from the lotus flower coming from the navel of Garbhadaksha Vishnu. So he's directly the son of Lord Vishnu, but not of Lakshmi. Not of Lakshmi, because he's just born directly from Lord Vishnu himself. Right. So, there's a purport, a short purport here, which makes the point that Narada is not the most senior son of Lord Brahma. He's definitely one of the sons. But he's not the most senior son. There are others who are more senior, like the four Kumars are senior, and there are others. But Narada is superior on the basis of his deeper devotion. He possesses more bhakti for the Lord than any of the others, actually. Basically. Yes, four Kumars, more than them also. And yes, so Narada is special amongst the sons. But the father is more special than the sun. So Lord Brahma is more special than Narada. So text 31. Now Indra is explaining different reasons why he feels Lord Brahma has got more mercy, is the recipient of more mercy. And they're good reasons. Some of them are very good, actually. But you know, I think you know by now what's going to happen. That Narada Muni is going to go and present these same reasons. But Lord Brahma is going to say, no, 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 no. And defeat each one, refute each one. That you say that I got more mercy because of this. But actually, that doesn't mean I have more mercy. So it's an interesting point that many of these things, they can be taken as mercy. But if you look at them from another point of view, then they can be taken to not be mercy. We already experienced that in quite some detail with Lord Indra in relation to Lord Vamana, Upendra, his younger brother. Narada Muni had said that because the Lord is your younger brother, then you got the special mercy in this way and that way and different ways. But then we saw last night how Lord Indra was just saying, no, no, no. That doesn't mean that I got special mercy. And in many cases, he says that actually it wasn't mercy at all. It was bad for me. It was detrimental. So there's no question of it being mercy. So the same sort of thing is going to happen here too. All right, so text 31. In one day of Brahma, 14 Indras like me come and go, along with different sets of Manus and all the demigods. That one day equals 1,000 cycles of earthly ages. So just see. He lives how long? Just some fantastic length of time. That in just one of his days, 14 Indras come and go, are born and die. Yes, so, what special position Lord Brahma has compared to Lord Indra, and Indra is saying he got more mercy because he lived so long. And 32 is continuing the same theme. According to the scriptures, Brahma's night is of the same duration. 360 of such days and nights make one of his years, and his life lasts 100 years. So there's a purport here. There are 14 different Indras, sages, demigods, Manus, sons of Manu, and special incarnations. There's 14, you could say, sets of them appear one after the other, because there are 14 Manvantaras in one day of Brahma. Manvantara means the life of one Manu. Yeah. So all these people, 14 Indras, 14 sets of the sages, 14 sets of the many demigods, 14 Manus, 14 sons of Manu, and 14 groups of different avatars. others. They all come and go, one after the other, 14 in one day of Brahma. And that's just the sunlit day. That's not the night. The night is on top of that. Well, the night's the night, but in terms of time, there's the night also. Yes. So, except for Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, all the other demigods and other great personalities, they come and go, 14 generations, you could say, in one day of Brahma. Otherwise, Vishnu, of course, he just carries on. And Lord Shiva, he also lives for as long as Lord Brahma. And then he dies. So a verse is quoted, Srimad Bhagavatam 12:7-15. In each reign of Manu, 6 manifestations of Lord Hari appear. So these are now the 6 different types of manifestations of the Lord. Indra, the chief demigods, the ruling Manu, the sons of Manu, the great sages, and the partial incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So those are 6 manifestations. And comment is, Purandara Indra, because that's the name of our Indra, Purandara. Purandara Indra has heard about all this, but he is too short-lived to have realized it directly. Short-lived. He only lives for, what is it, about 60 or 61 or something, cycles of the 4 yugas only. Therefore he's too short-lived to have realized it all directly. All right, verse 33. This is Indra, of course, continuing. He is the creator of the planets and the rulers he assigns them. He is the world's chief protector, the dispenser of the fruits of karma, and at the onset of his night, the destroyer of the world. So these are different things, special things that Lord Brahma does. He creates the planets. He creates the rulers of the planets. He is the chief protector of the world. He's the chief person in terms of the whole process of monitoring the karma and seeing the process of karma works properly. And then at night when he takes rest, the whole world, at least a lot of the world, is destroyed. To have that powerful a position, that special mercy from the Lord, which is true. But we will see later what Brahma has to say about that. So here's a very interesting one. This is verse 34. The Mahapurusha, the thousand-headed form of the Lord, is always directly visible on Brahma's planet, personally accepting the countless oblations offered him, and thus always giving delight to his devotees. So, devotees, there's a long purport here. It's just about the biggest purport so far in the book, I'd say. Anyway, it's one of them at least. So, let's go through it step by step. It's a nice purport. So at the beginning of each day of Brahma, every day during his whole life. Brahma appoints qualified candidates to serve as Indra, the great sages, the Prajapatis, and other demigods. And he protects the universe by establishing the system of Vedic sacrifice, the social laws for the different categories of humans according to Varnashram. So he not only creates it, but he maintains it also. Yes, by protecting it in this way. And Indra says that Brahma also destroys the world, not exactly directly, but in the sense that when he goes to sleep at the beginning of his night, then he gives up his control of all the functions of the universe. Because now he's going to sleep. And when you go to sleep, you know, you could be king of the world, but you can't do a thing when you're asleep. So when he goes to sleep, all the different things which he is overseeing and seeing that happen, they stop happening. And so there's destruction. So, let's see. So, living with him on his planet is the Mahapurusha, the thousand-headed first incarnation. Who is this? Who is being talked about? Who is the Mahapurusha? It is Mahavishnu. Mahavishnu. Yes. And then from Mahavishnu comes Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. So there's a whole lot of verses from the Bhagavatam quoted about the process of the manifestation of these forms of the Purusha avatars. Then it goes on to talk about how Brahma appears from the lotus flower, which has come from the navel of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu as he's lying down there on the Garbhadak ocean at the bottom of the universe. So, yes, so that's there. Brahma comes from him. Let's read a couple of these Bhagavatam verses. Brahma saw that the lotus on which he was situated was spread throughout the universe, and he contemplated how to create all the planets which were previously merged in that very same lotus. Thus engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Brahma entered into the whirl of the lotus, and as it spread all over the universe, he divided it into three divisions of worlds, and later into 14 divisions. So those verses we just read right now, they're Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, chapter 10, verses 7 and 8. Right, so then Brahma, he went into meditation, and in meditation he saw the thousand-headed Mahapurusha. In other words, it's Mahavishnu, a manifestation. Well, it's Mahavishnu. It's Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. It's Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. Because then he expanded. Yeah. So Gavadakshaya Vishnu has been spoken about here. He is a form of the Mahapurusha. The original form is Mahavishnu. But now within each universe, the Mahapurusha is Gavadakshaya Vishnu. And so Lord Brahma offered prayers to the Lord and then said to him, "My dear Lord, may you come and live on my planet in this very form." Therefore, a form of Gavadakshaya Vishnu, the Mahapurusha, who's a form of the Mahapurusha, came and lived and lives on Brahmaloka with Lord Brahma. So he is the glorious Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yes, very, very great and very, very wonderful. So this Mahapurusha, this form of the Purusha Avatar Gavadakshaya Vishnu, sort of like an expansion of him, he produced the total body of the universe and entered it as his pastime, not for his enjoyment, but rather to help the living entities. So, his beautiful, rather, the enjoyer of the universal body is the most pious of conditioned beings, Brahma. So, and the Mahapurusha, his beautiful body accommodates all the three worlds. And his pastimes consist of creation, maintenance, and annihilation. And as Indra said in the verse, the Lord Mahapurusha on Brahmaloka, he consumes all the offerings made in sacrifice, which, because there's so many sacrifices going on, it's just a constant flow of sacrifices. So the offerings which he eats resemble a constantly flowing river, because on Brahmaloka so many sacrifices are always being performed. And thanks to the Lord being satisfied by those offerings, the inhabitants of Brahmaloka, they're just in a permanent state of bliss, transcendental happiness. But of course it's true that the Mahapurusha occasionally leaves. Not much, not often. Sometimes when Krishna appears, he goes down to join him in Mathura Dham. So he's missing for a little while. But time in Brahmaloka is so different to time here on this planet, where the Lord goes to engage in pastimes once in a day of Brahma. So, because the passing of time in Brahmaloka is so much faster, then, like Krishna was on this planet for 125 years. But for Lord Brahma on Brahmaloka is just a matter of a few seconds. But you know how it was like for the cowherd boys and the gopis when they couldn't see Krishna even for a second or a couple of seconds. It was just devastating separation. So similarly, Lord Brahma feels separation like that, something like that. When the Lord goes, by his experience of time, by Lord Brahma's experience of time, when the Lord goes from Brahmaloka down to planet Earth for just it's almost no time at all and then returns. But still, even though we're talking about seconds maybe or something like that, it for Lord Brahma, that separation is overwhelming. Just for a few seconds. So therefore, it's said here, therefore it's said that the Mahapurusha is always on the planet of Brahma. He's always there. Even though he is not exactly always there, but it's said he is, because when he goes, on a few occasions every now and then, by the experience of time on Brahmaloka, you basically can't even notice it. Therefore, the verse says, 34, he's always there. Little subtlety. 35, I could give you thousands of other reasons why Brahma is the real object of Sri Krishna's mercy. What more needs to be said? He is, in fact, Krishna himself. Whoa. Haribol. That's a very Achintya Bhed Abhed statement. That is. Yes. Yeah, there's oneness, but there's definitely difference also. Right. Let's see now. Okay, and then verse 36, yeah. You know this. This is Indra again speaking to Narada. You know this, since it is proclaimed in both Shruti and Smriti. It's in the scriptures. And Indra knows that Narada knows the scriptures. He knows the scriptures inside out. So you know this, since it is proclaimed in both Shruti and Smriti. And he says, you must also be aware of other aspects of Lord Brahma's greatness. And not only his greatness, but the greatness of other residents of his planet, Brahmaloka. So, there's a purport. In which there's some statements from the Bhagavatam about the oneness. Let's read two verses together here. Bhagavatam 4, 7, 50 and 51. Lord Vishnu said, Brahma, Lord Shiva and I are the supreme cause of the material manifestation. I am the supersoul, the self-sufficient witness. But impersonally, there is no difference between Brahma, Lord Shiva and me. But impersonally, there's no difference. It's in a special sense. My dear Daksha Dwija, I am the original personality of Godhead. But in order to create, maintain, and annihilate this cosmic manifestation, I act through my material energy, and according to the different grades of activity, my representation are differently named, representations like Brahma and Shiva. Yeah, so that's, oneness. And there's another verse. Actually, it's just a couple of verses later in the Bhagavatam, 4754. One who does not consider Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, or the living entities in general to be separate from the Supreme, and who knows Brahman, actually realizes peace. Others do not. So, well, this verse is saying that we should not consider Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva to be separate from the Lord. There's no separation, there's oneness. But it's not only Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. It's the living entities in general. And who's that, devotees? That's you and me. That's you and me. There's a type of oneness between us and the Supreme Lord also, in certain specific ways. This is Achintya Bhed Abhed Tattva. All right, so now we go on to the second major section, you could say, of the second chapter. And this goes from verse 37, which we're going to go into in a moment, from verse 37 to verse 78. And it's the name of the section, the title we've given it is Lord Brahma the greatest recipient of the Lord's mercy? That is the question, isn't it? So it's divided into a number of subsections. Let's see, anyway, three, it looks like there's three. There's three. There's four. There's three. Wow, what's going on? Actually, the section goes beyond 78, it looks like. It goes to 91. Oh, well, it's the rest of the chapter, really speaking. And it's all about Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma. It is Lord Brahma the greatest recipient of the Lord's mercy? Okay, so first subsection is from verse 37 to verse 43. And the subject matter is Narada Muni arrives in Brahma Loka to find everyone worshipping the Mahapurusha, that special form of the Purusha avatars. You know the Purusha avatars, Mahavishnu, Agavadakshaya Vishnu, Shiradakshaya Vishnu. Sometimes Mahavishnu is called Karnadakshaya Vishnu. So they are the Purushas. This form of the Lord is the Mahapurusha. He's the special manifestation of those Purusha avatars. Right, so this is from verse 37 to verse 43. Let us just read through. Here we have verse 37. Sri Parikshit said, having heard these words from Indra, godly Narada replied, well said, sir, well said, and hastily went to Brahma's planet. Yes, Narada Muni, he's just inspired and excited. There, Narada first heard from a distance the huge sound of the many great sacrifices performed unceasingly and with great devotion by the sages on Brahmaloka. So, there's a purport here that there are different ways of doing Vedic sacrifices, yajna, fire sacrifices, according to the resources of the people who are doing them. And according to their aspirations, their desires, their ambitions, what they want to achieve through doing the sacrifice. And more than any other Brahmins in the whole universe, the residents of Brahma's planet are willing and able to carry out the longest, most complex, biggest, most sophisticated sacrifices in the universe. And this is what Narada Muni walked into. Of course, you know, for him, he's been there many times because it's his father's place. He's been there. He's spent a lot of time there. But still, when he goes in, it's really, he's sort of taken aback a bit by what's described here as the huge sound of many great sacrifices performed unceasingly and with great devotion. Yes. So they're able to do the longest, most complex sacrifices, these Brahmins on Brahmaloka. And the purport says that therefore, for Narada Muni, the whole experience of, you know, walking in and there's all these sacrifices and the loud noise of the chanting of the mantras, he thought, this is a very busy place. Because actually there was a great din. In English we would use the word din, means loud noise, coming from the chanting of the mantras in all the different places all around of all the different sacrifices. So now here is Narada. He's arrived. He then beheld among the sages the Supreme Lord in his Mahapurusha form, looking very much satisfied, decorated with crowns of matted locks. Interesting. Matted. Oh, yeah. There's something a little interesting. You know what? The Sanskrit word for matted locks is in the verse, jata. You've heard of jatila from Yavat in Vrajmandala. She has a big jat here, raised up, a big jat. Therefore she's called jatila. So the Mahapurusha, who was very happy with all these sacrifices and everything going on, he had, it says, the translation is, he was decorated with crowns of matted locks, means he had a jat, or some jats, just, you know, matted locks means uncared for, uncared for here. Verse 40. The Lord, in his thousand-headed form, the personification of sacrifice, had appeared there with his consort just to accept the offerings and delight his worshippers. Excuse me. So, this Lord Mahapurush is the Lord of all sacrifices, presiding deity of all the sacrifices. In the Purusha Sukta in Rig Veda, it's described that at the beginning of creation, in the first sacrifice of all, that the Lord Mahapurusha provided the ingredients for the sacrifice, sacrificial ingredients, from his own body. Hare Krishna. That's advanced level. Yes. So, in this way, the Lord doesn't simply take offerings, he tries to please the worshippers. And he enjoys personally distributing the results of sacrifice. To enliven lotus-born Brahma, the Lord consumed all the items offered him, placing them into his 1,000 mouths with his 1,000 hands. Supreme Lord of sacrifice. So now here, yeah, it's another fairly long purport. This is, what did we say, verse 42. After awarding the performers of the sacrifices the benedictions they desired, Lord Mahapurusha went to his sleeping quarters. As the goddess Lakshmi massaged his feet, he entered his pastime of sleep. So, in order to encourage the worshippers, the devotees, the people who are doing these sacrifices, in order to encourage them that just see, I'm accepting your offering. And he would accept it and eat it to encourage them. He is never hungry. Well, he's hungry for bhakti. That's what he's hungry for. So, in order to encourage them, so they wouldn't doubt, did he accept my offering or not? So he ate the oblations with relish and without hesitating for the whole time that the offerings were continuing. And then when the offerings finished, the Lord blessed the sages with different types of benedictions, fulfilling their desires, such as, for example, what might they desire? What's mentioned here is the desire that they always be able to perform similar sacrifices. And then Lord Mahapurusha and Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, they then went to their private quarters to rest. And then he couldn't be seen, the Mahapurusha couldn't be seen by the residents of Brahmaloka. Yes, so then, now, well, let's see. Here's some background information. Let me just read it. According to Sri Shukadev Goswami's account at the beginning of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, at the end of Dwapara Yuga, Lord Brahma and the other demigods, on the request of the earth personified, approached Lord Vishnu on Sweta Dweep from the shore of the Milk Ocean. So, that's with Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma was at the head of the group. So one might ask, why did they need to go to Sweta Dweep if Lord Vishnu, in fact the Mahapurusha, special great form of these Purusha avatars, so why did they need to go to the bank of the milk ocean, and then Brahma do some sort of transmission to the Lord on the island in the milk ocean, and then get a message back. Because Lord Vishnu is always there on Brahmaloka. He could just go and ask them, can you please sort out this Kamsa and all these rascal demons? So why did he go all the way to Swetadweep or to the milk ocean? So explanation. Although this journey was strictly speaking unnecessary, during some days of Brahma, the pastime of appealing for Lord Krishna to descend unfolds in this way. During other days of Brahma, such as the one described in the Sri Hari Vamsa, Lord Vishnu is approached on Brahma Loka itself. Because he's there. That's the whole thing. Mahapurusha is there on Brahma Loka, associating with Lord Brahma. So Sanatana Goswami suggests that Brahma and the others may have gone to Swetadweep because they felt reluctant to disturb Lord Mahapurusha's privacy while he was enjoying his sleep. Or else, Brahma may have calculated that if Lord Purusha were to descend to earth at his request, Brahma Loka would be bereft of his presence for the duration of the avatar. It would be better, therefore, to go to the milk ocean and ask Lord Vishnu there to become the avatar. So the avatar, the Mahapurusha, Lord Vishnu, in Brahmaloka would stay there. This is diplomacy, isn't it? Transcendental politics. In any case, when Sri Krishna descends, all the expansions of Godhead appear within him, including Lord Mahapurusha and the Lord of Swetadweep. Thus, to say that Krishna descends through one form of Vishnu or another makes little difference. Krishna alone is the ultimate source of all avatars. Okay, so now, verse 43. At the Lord's request, Brahma then instructed his sons to continue the sacrifices while he went to his own royal court to deliberate on the management of the universe. Right. So the explanation here, just a short explanation, is that just before Lord Mahapurusha went to his quarters to rest with his wife Lakshmi, he advised Brahma that you turn over, you hand over these sacrifices to your sons. And this confirms the Supreme Lord's instructions recorded in the Vedas. The Vedas describe that Brahma is the first Vedic priest, and then he is followed by his sons, who teach the methods of sacrifice afterwards to the people of the universe. Let's see. So now, you know what's going to happen, don't you? Narada is just going to go to Lord Brahma and just glorify him like mad. You're just wonderful. I'm going to read verses 44 and 45, strictly speaking, they're from the next section, subsection. But they're just introducing it. Narada Muni greeting Brahma and glorifying Brahma. So, as Brahma sat comfortably on his universal throne, absorbed in hearing and reciting the glories of his Lord, tears flowed from his eight eyes. Surrounding Lord Brahma in attendance were the personified powers of universal rulership. The powers of ruling, which are needed for ruling the universe, they were there in personal forms. Wow. So Narada came close, offered respects to his father by falling to the ground like a stick, and then spoke. So just a couple of points here from the purport. There's a purport. So the Mahapurusha has gone into some other room or some other part of the palace of Lord Brahma, into a private place, closed the door with his wife. So, but while he was there, while the Supreme Lord was there, the Mahapurusha, Narada couldn't really speak his mind openly about Lord Brahma. Because when the much senior person is present, you should really glorify a lesser person. Yeah. So it says here, while the Supreme Lord was present, Narada did not speak his mind. Either he thought that speaking would be improper, or he found no opportunity to say anything until after the Lord had left, because there was just so much going on and so much noise and voices. Yes. Only then could Narada offer full obeisances to his father, because one is generally forbidden to bow down to anyone else in the presence of the Supreme Lord. Since Brahma is both Narada's father and his spiritual master, Narada may have bowed only his head to Brahma in front of Lord Vishnu. Oh, Krishna, you got to just be careful you don't do the wrong thing. But then bowed down with his whole body on the floor after Lord Vishnu had left. And Lord Brahma, right now, he was fixed on hearing about the great qualities of Lord Vishnu, such as, for example, his exceptional kindness to his devotees. Hare Krishna. All right, devotees, we will continue on tomorrow evening. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.